Yeah, and we've got Louise Byrne online. Now, Louise is representing the, or she's speaking on behalf of the West Papuan community in Melbourne. Good morning, Louise.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, good, good. Welcome to 3CR. And again, I've interviewed you before. Good to have you online. Now, lots of developments with the West Papuan struggle, I believe, yes?
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah, the last I heard was that the Melanesian Spearhead Group was considering a membership of the West Papuan government.
Yes.
And there's some updates you want to give us.
Okay. Well, one of the aims of an independence movement like West Papua, which has developed its state as a declarative state, is to get recognition. By other states. And so that has actually taken place with the Melanesian Spearhead Group, which is...
Louise, do you want to stay a little bit away from your earpiece because it's coming across a bit gruffy?
Okay. Is that better?
Yeah, that's better.
Yeah, okay.
Thanks.
One of the aims of a movement like West Papua's movement for independence is to develop relations with other states so that it's a form of recognition. This was didn't happen for so long with West Papua because it's such a suppressed struggle, but eventually did in the last couple of years with the Melanesian Spearhead Group. And the Melanesian Spearhead Group is of the states in the Pacific, like Papua New Guinea, Vanuatu, Solomon Islands, the Kanaky of New Caledonia, and Fiji, of course. And so it's been a very long and difficult process because Papua New Guinea and Vanuatu are somewhat under the financial sway of the Indonesian Republic.
Of course.
Most people know. Mm. But anyway, it has happened now. They've got an office in the Melanesian Spearhead Group, the Melanesian Secretariat down there in Vanuatu, and they've paid their dues. Membership dues, and so that has happened, and it's had this bouncing effect, really, because it's now there is a Pacific coalition of states for West Papua's independence, and their sole purpose is to have West Papua relisted in the United Nations decolonization list.
Of course, yes.
From which it was removed in 1969.
Mm.
So now a really dramatic outcome of that was just yesterday, actually, at the Human Rights Council meeting, the UN Human Rights Council meeting in Geneva.
Mm-hmm.
And that coalition stood up very strongly and made a report against what Indonesia is doing in West Papua. So it's kind of, and because it's the Human Rights Council, well, because it's the UN body, it's broadcast around the world on the UN web TV program. So that was like
major victory.
Beg your pardon?
A major victory.
Well, a major, yes, I suppose, yes. The UN Human Rights Council is sort of really getting legs. It was formed in 2006, and one of its mechanisms is the Universal Periodic Review. They call it the UPR. And states have to stand accountable to reports made by special rapporteurs, independent experts, member groups, NGOs. And what Ronald Wassell, who's the Minister of Justice, he was the spokesperson yesterday for this Pacific coalition, said Indonesia has proved itself incapable of responding to the criticisms, which was very strong. He mentioned crimes against humanity. It was a very strong 6-minute report. And all the behind his public statement, of course, are all these other reports by the special rapporteurs and independent experts and NGOs. So there's building up this kind of comprehensive case against Indonesia, which is one side of the struggle, the resistance, and then the other side of the struggle is the nation making advances by the West Papuans themselves. So I think we're actually really in a very good position to move forward. So probably really the best position they've been in since 1962, I guess.
Which is really good news, yes.
Yes,
and I also believe that, I mean, I think for listeners who may not have caught up with what's happened in West Papua is that 1969 invasion by Indonesia, and 500,000 West Papuans have been killed, and the atrocities by the Indonesian military continues in West Papua today. People are killed on a daily basis, apparently.
So the sort of the genocide reports are building up. It's very hard to write or get the data to write a genocide report. But they're still and sort of one step behind that is the crimes against humanity.
Yes, of course.
So they're sort of building up, and international support around the world is really high when you're across what's happening in each country, and then across these intergovernmental kind of organisations like the Melanesian Spearhead Group, this Pacific Coalition, then you've got this the African Caribbean Pacific Group.
Yes,
which
I was going to ask
have
you.
Heard about. It's a really big body of states that meet, and they've actually working very closely with the European Union on West Papua. So you know, if you add up all the countries within the African, Caribbean, Pacific, you're getting quite a large number of UN member states. And ultimately, I think the what has to happen through that process is that when you put a motion into the General Assembly, you're supported by 2/3 of the states.
Which is fantastic.
So I think we're well and truly on the move now.
Yes, yeah. And the fact that, you know, I think the crucial point in the struggle for the West Papuans, I guess, is the role of Australia and its support for the Indonesian government from the very beginning of its invasion of West Papua. And we in Australia have a responsibility to contact, you know, those who want to help should contact their local MP to talk about this, because Australia has continued to support Indonesia for economic purposes, ignoring the human rights violations Indonesia has conducted in West Papua for a long time. That is since 1969. That's about 50 odd years now.
40 even
years.
Longer, actually.
Longer, yeah.
And so, I mean, I think it was the support of Edmund Barwick, way back in 1962, who was a very influential Attorney General, and he was the UN representative, Australia's UN representative, and it was actually him who changed Australian policy from supporting the self-determination program set up by the Dutch in West Papua to swinging in behind the Indonesian occupation of West Papua.
That's right, I forgot
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so it's been long and unchanging since, and only a couple of days ago when the Indonesian president was down here, you heard our Prime Minister talking about respect for territorial integrity and Indonesia's sovereignty. That's code for keep stamping down on West Papua.
Yes.
And one thing Australians can do is really push for the overturn of the Lombok Treaty signed in 2006. Yeah, because that's where it's said in Clause 2.3 that Australia and Indonesia have to support, suppress, like not allow, outlaw the raising of the Morning Star flag.
Yes.
So it's a great violation of even our rights, let alone the West Papuan.
Yes. We'll catch up on this again, because I think the flag was originally raised on the 1st of December for 10 days when West Papuans felt that they were free. Mm. And I can't remember the year, but that's a significant day for the West Papuans, isn't it, Louise?
Yes, 1st of December 1961.
Yes, yeah. We need to do something about that later on.
Okay.
But the other thing I wanted to actually raise quickly is how hypocritical the Australian government is. You know, it imposes all these standards on other countries like China and the Spratly Islands and so on in terms of the boundaries and the integrity of nations, but it hasn't considered how its activities are in direct contradiction of that in relation to not just West Papua, but also to East Timor in the oil reservoirs in the East Timor Sea, and that's been renegotiated, of course. But it's glaring, the contradictions. One rule for us and one rule for other people. Rules seem to still apply when it comes to our very closest neighbours, doesn't it?
Well, it's actually when you're out lobbying internationally, it's really embarrassing to come from Australia.
I'm glad you said that.
Yes, because anyone who really doesn't want to hear just says, brings up this litany of sins by Australia, and you can almost be left legless.
Yes, well, it ranges in all sectors, including human rights, the way we treat refugees. And
yes.
And there are quite a few West Papuans who are in the refugee list as well, aren't there?
Yes, that's right.
It's an absolute disgrace. But anyway, we've got to just keep on pushing and fighting, don't we?
Yep.
Thank you very much, Louise. That's a good update. But we'll talk to you again, because I believe Jacob Rumbiak, the foreign minister who actually resides at or has an office in Docklands, has gone to Africa. So we'll get some feedback on that when he returns. But we also want to encourage people to help the office sustain itself. And they've got a rent assistance program. What do you call it? Rent assistance program.
An open day? Is that? Sorry. Well, the office in Dockland.
Yes.
So that's supported by what's called a rent collective.
Rent collectors. That's the word I was missing.
So you sort of can buy shares into the future, if that's the way of putting it, with $30 a month.
Yes, a dollar a day.
It's a beautiful five-star energy office, so it's very inspiring for the Papuans and for the activists that work there,
And it's a lovely place. You have lots of activities there too.
Yes.
For those who are interested in supporting the cause of the West Papuans, you want to give people the office number, Louise?
Yes. I just have to look it up because I can never remember. it's 9. Hang on. Oh gosh, this
let
is
me get it
back, isn't it? I've got it here now, and it's 9049 9590, and it's down in the Lifestyle Building in Dockland.
Okay, did you get the number?
9049.
Yes.
9590.
Excellent. Yes. Thank you very much.
Okay.
And we'll catch up again soon.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye.
Bye, Lalitha.
Okay, bye.